And now, the man your mother warned you about, Mike Cannon.
Welcome to the third hour of this week's show. Up next will be This Week in Palestine with news and information from a non-Western, non-Zionist point of view produced in Palestine. After that will be Black Agenda Radio. Then some odds and ends to the top of the hour with music of love, rage and resistance, as well as some goofiness thrown in here and there. That's the type of alternative non-corporate programming you get each and every week here on the Mike Cannon Show. And as always, I'd like to thank you for listening.
No, I'm not waiting around while you have all the fun. Now come on, are you going to just stand there all day?
This Week in Palestine, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for September 20th through 26th, 2008. Palestinian leadership still hopeful of a two-state solution despite of the ongoing Israeli policy of land grab. Palestinians, on the other hand, continue their nonviolent resistance against the wall and settlements. These stories and more are coming up. Stay tuned. As usual, we begin our report with nonviolent actions and protests in Palestine, during which dozens of Palestinians were wounded this week. Dozens were treated for gas inhalation in the village of Na'lin near the West Bank city of Ramallah on Friday afternoon during an anti-wall protest. The Popular Committee Against the Wall and Settlements organized a nonviolent protest in the village after the Friday prayer. Israeli troops who came to the village did not allow the protesters to reach the land which has been registered as land to be lost to the extension of the wall. As the protesters came close to the land, the soldiers showered them with dozens of CS gas canisters, causing many of them to choke. During the Friday prayer, the preacher called the worshippers to unite and to continue the struggle against the Israeli military occupation. On their part, the popular committee in the village said in a press release that the villagers should boycott the permits which Israel requests the farmers to obtain in order to enter their property, which is registered for confiscation. Meanwhile, Salah Al-Khawaja, spokesperson of the committee, told IMEMC that there will be a campaign to protect the farmers while attempting to harvest their olive trees from settler and military attacks. On Tuesday, Ahed Al-Khawaja, member of the popular committee in Na'lin, suffered facial injuries as Israeli troops fired gas bombs and concussion grenades at him as he was accompanying a delegation from the European Union visiting the village. According to a press release by the grassroots Palestinian anti-apartheid wall campaign sent to IMEMC, Al-Khawaja sustained serious injuries as one of the grenades hit him in his face, causing him a fracture in the nose and burns and bruises in the face and eyes. Khawaja was transported to the Sheikh Zayed Hospital in Ramallah for medical treatment. Doctors estimate that he needs at least a week before the recovery process. Not far away from Na'lin, in Bil'in village, three protesters were wounded on Friday at noon, including a Scottish human rights activist, with rubber-coated steel bullets fired by the Israeli military forces in the village. The wounded were identified as Yassin Muhammad, Tamer Al-Khatib, and Oliver. Their wounds were described as light. Troops fired rubber-coated steel bullets and CS gas at civilians who gathered after the Friday prayer to protest against the land confiscation and settlements and wall building on the village's land. Protesters carried Palestinian flags and banners calling for more active nonviolent resistance to the wall and settlements, and also the opening of the roads closed by the Israeli military. Among the protesters was an Israeli who had refused to enlist with the Israeli army. Yuval Aron, 19, a resident of the mixed Arab-Jewish village Neve Shalom, Peace Oasis, near Tel Aviv, said that he will not register for military service in the Israeli army, although he knows that he will end up in jail for doing so. He added that some of his friends are already in jail for refusing the service. Oron, who will be called for his military service next month, said the reason for refusing the service is that he would not serve an army that forcefully occupies other people's land. In other news, members of the Free Gaza movement said Friday that they will postpone their second trip from Cyprus to Gaza due to disagreement with one of the boat owners. The Free Gaza movement organizers believe the delay is a result of outside pressure on the boat owner. In August, Free Gaza movement managed to sail to Gaza with two boats carrying 44 ordinary people in bid to break the siege Israel imposed on the coastal region for over 15 months. The boats returned to Cyprus carrying some Palestinians who needed urgent medical treatment unavailable in Gaza due to the blockade. For IMEMC.org, this is George Shmawi. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas asserted on Thursday that he is still hopeful towards realizing a two-state solution as Palestinians mark this week the International Day of Jerusalem. This and more with IMEMC's correspondent in Gaza, Rami Al-Mighari.
The Palestinian people marked this Friday the International Day of Jerusalem as peace talks between Palestinians and Israelis are currently unstable. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas said on Thursday on the sideline of the United Nations General Assembly annual meeting in New York that he is looking forward to achieving the two-state solution envisioned by the U.S. President George W. Bush. The Palestinian Prime Minister of Hamas in Gaza, Mr. Ismail Haniyeh, commented on the occasion by saying that Jerusalem is under danger and requires a genuine political and economic intervention to save the holy city. Also, Deputy Secretary General of the Islamic Jihadi group, Ziyad al-Nakhala, called for the mobilization by Arabs and Muslims alike in order to free the occupied East Jerusalem from the Israeli occupation. Al-Nakhala's senior, Ramadan Abdullah Shallah, said from Damascus this week that the Palestine Liberation Organization, PLO, was established to liberate Palestine, not to recognize Israel, referring to current Palestinian-Israeli talks based on the Oslo Accords of 1993, signed by PLO. In the meantime, Palestinian national unity talks are underway in Cairo between Egyptian officials and Palestinian factions' representatives. The talks are aimed to bring together the major rival Fatah and Hamas parties. The Fatah delegation had already presented the parties' vision to ending the division as the Hamas delegation will arrive in Cairo on October 8. Hamas has already announced willingness to an unconditional dialogue. The Hamas spokesman in Gaza, Fawzi Barhoum, stated that his party wants a dialogue that returns to the National Unity Government, reforms the PLO on basis of the 2006 parliamentary elections, and also reconstructs the Palestinian security services based on the same results which brought Hamas to power. In June 2007, Hamas seized control of the Gaza Strip, ejecting Fatah loyal security forces and personnel and forming institutions of its own. President Mahmoud Abbas of Fatah outlawed Hamas and boycotted its government. Hamas has shunned peace talks with Israel until Israel holds all its actions against the Palestinian people, including settlement building or their expansion, as well as daily attacks on Palestinian cities, towns, villages and refugee camps. At the Israeli level, an Israeli ministerial committee prepared this week a list of potential Palestinian freed detainees to be swapped for captured Israeli soldier in Gaza, Gilad Shalit. The list of 450 is made up of half from the ruling Hamas party in Gaza, has long demanded Egyptian mediators. The list remains unconfirmed until it is endorsed by the outgoing Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and accepted by the Hamas party. Also in Israel, the ruling Kadima party's newly elected leader, Foreign Minister Tzevi Livni, met this week with Defense Minister and head of the Labour Party, Ehud Barak, over forming a coalition government after BM Olmert resigned from post earlier in the week. Commenting on potential peace deal with the Palestinians by the end of this year, Livni believed that there will be no room for establishing an independent Palestinian state. Mustafa Barghouti, Palestinian PM, head of the National Initiative Party and former minister, considered the Sid Levin's statements as an indication of what he considered no difference among Israeli officials when it comes to decisive solutions of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. For IMEMC.org, I am Rami Al-Mighari in Gaza.
A 14-year-old Palestinian boy was killed near the illegal Israeli settlement of Yitzhar in the West Bank city of Nablus, while at least four other Palestinian residents were wounded in separate incidents across the West Bank. IMEMC's Hannah Kidan with the details.
On Saturday, Israeli troops shot and killed a 14-year-old boy near the legal Israeli settlement of Yitzhar, erected on the land of Nablus City. The boy was walking along the settlement's fence when he was gunned down by the soldiers. Witnesses said that the victim's home is 100 meters away from the settlement, while Israeli troops claimed he was carrying a knife and a Molotov cocktail. Recently, the settlers of Yitzhar settlement have been reported for clashing with local Palestinian residents in the vicinity of the settlement. In Na'alin village, near the West Bank city of Ramallah, a member of the Palestinian anti-apartheid wall campaign was hit with an Israeli gas canister in his face, causing a fracture to his nose and burns to his face. The victim, Ahed al-Khawaja, was wounded on Tuesday during a visit by a European Union delegation to the segment of the Israeli separation barrier in Na'alin. Also this week, Israeli soldiers, manning the Hawara checkpoint in Nablus city, shot and wounded the Palestinians, including a woman, after a young woman attacked the soldier with an acid to face. The wounded woman is believed to be the assailant. Many human rights organizations have said that Israeli soldiers, manning hundreds of checkpoints across the West Bank, harass or delay movement of the Palestinian people for prolonged hours. In addition, Israeli army invasions of West Bank cities, towns, villages, and refugees camps continued throughout this week. More than a dozen Palestinians were detained during those invasions. Israeli army invasions included the Bethlehem, Nablus, Jenin, Tulkarem, and Hebron cities, through which the Israeli soldiers ransacked and searched houses, vandalizing them severely, according to witnesses. Meanwhile, the ruling Hamas party in Gaza reported this week that the Fatah allied Palestinian Authority's security services have rounded up more than a dozen of Hamas supporters and members in different parts of the West Bank. For IMEMC, this is Hana Kidan.
This week in Gaza, one Palestinian man was shot dead by Israeli troops near the border with Egypt. Meanwhile, the Israeli blockade of Gaza remains in place despite a three-month ceasefire. IMEMC's Rami Al-Mighari has more.
An Israeli army contingent invaded on a Friday afternoon the southern Gaza Strip town of Khaza'a to the east of Khan Yunis city. The Israeli soldiers detained two Palestinian residents from the area, witnesses said. Early this week, Israeli soldiers manning the southern Gaza border with Egypt spotted three Palestinian men. They killed one instantly and the other two escaped the scene. This shooting attack comes as Israel strictly blockades the Gaza Strip since June 2007 and despite a recent Egyptian brokered three-month-old ceasefire with Palestinian resistance factions. Almost 2 months ago, Israeli soldiers shot dead a 21-year-old young man on the southeastern Israel-Gaza borderlines. The victim was said to be sneaking into Israel to seek work amidst a debilitating Israeli blockade. This week in Israel, a military court sentenced local Gaza leader Ali Al-Kafarna of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, PFLP. He was sentenced to 12-year-long imprisonment after he was detained from the northern Gaza city of Beit Hanun during an Israeli invasion in 2006. Meanwhile, a newly emerged group in Gaza, calling itself the Brigades for Supporting the Oppressed, warned this week of blowing up the Egyptian-Palestinian Rafah crossing terminal in southern Gaza. The terminal remains closed. Earlier this week, sources close to the ruling Hamas party slammed the Egyptian authorities' mishandling of movement at the terminal on Saturday, as the Egyptians reopened the terminal for a couple of days. Egypt had closed the terminal following Hamas's takeover of Gaza, arguing the crossing should be reopened in accordance with the 2005's U.S. brokered operation agreement. Since then, the Egyptian authorities opened the terminal from time to time for special emergency cases in need of urgent medical care outside of Gaza, stranded visitors, or students awaiting to study overseas. In Gaza, Palestinian lawmaker and head of the local popular committee for breaking the Israeli siege on Gaza, Mr. Jamal Al-Khudri, announced on Thursday that the arrival of Hope boat in Gaza was delayed due to logistic problems. The Hope boat is similar to the Free Gaza boat, which symbolically broke the Gaza siege on August 23, as more than 44 internationals sailed from Cyprus to Gaza in a bid of support to the Palestinian people. For IMEMC.org, I'm Rami Al-Mighari in Gaza.
And that was just some of the news this week in Palestine. For constant updates, check our website www.imemc.org. Thanks for joining us from Occupied Bethlehem. This week's report has been brought to you by Hossam Qassis and George Rishmawi.
You know you only had one shot, to make it right, to do the right thing, so listen to the Mike Cannon Show.
South Africa seems finally willing to seriously assess the fruits of its victory against apartheid, achieved in 1994 with the assumption of power by Nelson Mandela and his African National Congress, the ANC. The system of legalized white supremacy seemed to go out with a whimper rather than the apocalyptic finale that so many had feared. But that was because the revolution was only partially completed. It brought social, political, and economic mobility to a small sliver of the black population, especially the politically well-connected, but did not alter the fundamental relationships between the rich and the poor black majority, between the multinational firms that dominate South African economic life and the continent's most organized industrial black working class. And it did not meaningfully address the grotesquely disproportionate white ownership of land. These questions of social democracy that go much deeper than one man, one vote, were put off indefinitely in the interest of stability, of avoiding white and capital flight. As a result, the dreams of the masses of South Africans were deferred so as not to create white panic. Rather than embark on a thoroughgoing transformation of South African society, the ruling factions in the African National Congress under Thabo Mbeki, who succeeded Nelson Mandela as president, decided they would create a class of black millionaires. The focus of their very narrow black capitalist project seemed to favor integration of Johannesburg's rich, formerly all-white neighborhoods rather than rapidly improving the quality of life in sprawling townships like Soweto, where the people live. It was a picture of new black luxury that Ebony and Black Enterprise magazines would certainly appreciate, but in no way resembled the free and truly equal South African society for which so many had sacrificed and died. The Grand Alliance that brought down white minority rule was based on the ANC, the South African Communist Party, and the Congress of South African Trade Unions, COSATU. In the interest of unity, the Communists and COSATU long avoided an outright break with Thabo Mbeki's leading faction in the ANC, which too often seemed to be the guardian of corporate South Africa and the new black corporate class. I will never forget the spectacle of COSATU's leader addressing a meeting of black American labor leaders, the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists, in Phoenix, Arizona in 2006. He quite literally begged for assistance from the African American trade unionists, who were barely able to keep their own heads above water after so many defeats at the hands of U.S. corporations. The South African union leader beseeched U.S. blacks to buy South African textiles, which had been decimated by Chinese competition. Amazing, I thought. COSATU's allies in the ANC hold state power, yet he appeals to marginalized black American workers for help. What black South Africans need, clearly, is a kind of regime change to get on with the revolution. Now, Thabo Mbeki, he's been deposed by the ANC in favor of a former ally of his named Jacob Zuma. COSATU, the Communists, and the ANC youth wing succeeded in forcing a change at the top. Now let us see if they have the courage and ideas to create real change at the bottom, to truly empower the South African majority. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford.
The Interplanetary Weather Service has issued a severe red sandstorm warning for Clark County in the eastern hemisphere of Mars, Bradbury County in the eastern hemisphere of Mars, Azimuth County in the eastern hemisphere of Mars,
Due to the nature of the 400-mile-per-hour winds, this red sand can cause immediate death through flaying. If you are in the path of this storm, please launch to geosynchronous orbit immediately. If you are unable to launch to orbit, stick your head between your knees and kiss your behind goodbye. Goodbye.
There is a growing realization that standardized testing for college entrance does not serve the interests of educational excellence or reward merit. Rather, SATs, PSATs, and their clones tend to freeze already existing societal privilege in place, allowing the already well-off to pass on that status to their children. The assessment comes from the National Association of College Admissions Counseling and from no less than Harvard University's Dean of Admissions and Financial Aid, William Fitzsimmons. Fitzsimmons says, "The test scores appear to calcify differences based on class, race, ethnicity, and parental educational attainment. In other words, the children of white parents who make good livings and had good educations tend to do well in standardized tests. But the tests don't reliably predict how well the kids will do in college." The educators note the vast differences that exist in life and learning experiences that are available to children in the United States. "No one who visits the range of secondary schools we visit," they concluded, "and goes to the communities we visit, can come away thinking the standardized tests can be a measure of someone's true worth or ability." The admissions counselors also urge that PSATs not be used to decide who is eligible for scholarships. This is very good news, the logic of which would be to finally destroy the rule of standardized tests, not just for college, but throughout the educational system. There is a huge body of study that shows race and class privilege is further embedded into society through the use of these tests, which have become a bulwark of rigidity, not mobility, in the United States. And that most emphatically means breaking the classist, racist grip of hyper-testing in elementary and secondary education through the stifling No Child Left Behind Act. The Bush regime and the plutocrats it serves understand perfectly well that class and race structures reinforce the rule of people like themselves. That's one reason they have imposed the draconian and educationally counterproductive standardized testing regime in the U.S. public education system. The other related motivation is to prove public schools are failing in order to boost private schooling and bogus theories of marketplace education. In ways that are only now being understood, real education is grinding to a halt at schools across the nation under the weight of relentless, ruthless testing. In the process, teacher creativity, innovation, and just plain caring fall by the wayside. Standardized testing does not encourage the deepening of democracy. Instead, it rewards privilege. This outcome is cumulative, adding layer upon layer of culture and class bias test results to all the other burdens and assaults that children of non-privileged parents will endure in their school lives. That's not a meritocracy, it's a caste system. There will always be a place for properly constructed testing in society, but tests should never be wielded as weapons against those born with less, to benefit the already fortunate. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford.
It's time to ask Mr. Green from the Sierra Club. Matthew in New Paltz, New York asks, "How can I convince others that household water conservation is important?"
Hey, Matthew, you better believe conservation is important. You can choose from gallons of arguments to convince people of this. But let's start with 4 points. Pollution, wildlife, money, and stench. When lakes, rivers, and underground aquifers contain less water, pollutants become more concentrated. And if we decrease water use, it could reduce the need for new dams and reservoirs that can mess up wildlife habitat. Pumping and treating water in the United States uses around 56 billion kilowatt hours a year, enough to power 5 million homes. The cost of wasting water also affects individual households, where heating water typically accounts for 14% of total energy use. Finally, stench. Conserving water helps ensure that we have enough H2O to keep us tolerably clean and safely hydrated for years to come.
Ask Mr. Green and learn a lot more online at sierraclubradio.org.
Neglected girls should worry. That's what God made sailors for.
don't. Cry for him or chase him, screw it and replace him with some good-looking Tom, Dick, or Jack. 'Cause if your kisses go home, the man you love, then your tears won't bring him back. If your tears won't hold the man you love, then your tears won't bring him back. No.
Explore the many decades of popular music Thursday nights on Round Trip with Neil at the Wheel. Two solid commercial-free hours of rock, blues, jazz, folk, and everything in between. That's Round Trip with Neil at the Wheel, Thursdays from 7 to 9 p.m., only on 93.3 WNRB LP Wausau.
Al Pacino and Robert De Niro together like they've never been before. One, a veteran policeman who states the obvious and repeats everything.
30 years on the job. That's a long time on the job. 30 years. It's a long time.
The other, a cop on the wrong side of the law, who makes no sense at all and can't control the volume of his voice.
Good cop, bad cop, and I don't even know what I go on!
Two legendary actors, two unintelligible performances.
Watch your back. Something's coming behind you. Behind you, something's coming. Watch your back. You watch your back.
My back. Your back. Cack-a-lack-a-lack-a-lack.
The biggest cinematic event of the year.
I don't know means I don't know. That's what it means.
Why don't you call your mother and see what your father says about it?
De Niro.
A cow. The cow goes moo. Moo. The cow. It's the sound it makes.
Pacino.
Cock-a-doodle you. Cock-a-doodle do nothing. And you got a dead kid on the sidewalk!
The movie.
Ba 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 ba.
Ba 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 ba.
Coming soon.
Well, my son asked me today, is this another Vietnam? I said, son, you know, it's well, it's no, it's go ask your mom. It brought back such precious memories of my days in business school, my favorite stool. Then my wife said, hey, I'm worried 'cause they're starting to deploy. I said, honey, don't be silly, we'll send someone else's boy. 'Cause we all make sacrifices, and in a war, that's what the poor people are for. I say, fight on for freedom's sake, long as I don't shake and bake.
Chicken Hawk.
Call me a Chicken Hawk.
Chicken Hawk.
Proud to be a Chicken Hawk. A loyal armchair jock. Let's check that Lockheed stock. I didn't walk the walk, but I can talk the talk.
Bawk, 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 bawk.
Just because you might have seen some action there on the front line, don't insult the guys who serve their country here on the back nine. I was gung-ho for gun-and-ho. Yes, I just had other priorities, like feeling more at ease. I say, bomb them to hell, but I'd rather not be Kentucky Fried.
Chicken Hawk.
Call me a Chicken Hawk.
Chicken Hawk.
Proud to be a Chicken Hawk. Watch while I bring the mock. Receipt to all Iraq. I didn't walk the walk, but I could talk the talk.
Bawk, 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 bawk.
Why did the chicken cross the road? Well, I'll tell you part. The chicken crossed the road to join the Texas Air National Guard. Roll call.
Rumsfeld, Pearl, Wolfowitz, Cheney,
Chicken Hawk.
Call me a Chicken Hawk.
Chicken Hawk.
Proud to be a Chicken Hawk. Watch while I bring them Hawk. Receive to all the rock. I didn't walk the walk, but I can talk the talk. Let me make this perfectly clear. The buck stops here.
Some wild-eyed 8-foot tall maniac grabs your neck, taps the back of your favorite head up against a barroom wall, and he looks you crooked in the eye, and he asks if you've paid your dues. Well, you just stare that big sucker right back in the eye, and you remember what old Jack Burton always says at a time like that. Have you paid your dues, Jack? Yes, sir, the check is in the mail.
Remorse for what? You people have done everything in the world to me. Doesn't that give me equal right? I can do anything I want to you people at any time I want to, because that's what you've done to me. If you spit in my face and smack me in the mouth and throw me in solitary confinement for nothing, what do you think's going to happen when I get out of here? Well, I haven't done enough. I might be ashamed of that. us for not doing enough. Maybe I should have killed 400 or 500 people, then I would have felt better. Then I felt like I really offered society something. You've got stuff in your brain that I'm not gonna tell you.
What do you want to call me a murderer for? I've never killed anyone! I don't mean to kill anyone! Sing it! I have it here!
I don't pretend to this old town to be anything fancy. I can, but I find more real in the world that I'm in than I do the tinsel. And the real world is the one I have to deal with every day. Believe me, if I started murdering people, there could not be left.
Chemical weapons threat. Terrorists dangerous. Died. Killed. A freak accident. Heart-wrenching controversy. Deaths. Prison term. Murders. Garbage. Cancer. Uproar. Truck bomb. Killed. Frustrated. FBI. Mean streets. Terrorists. Hostages. Hungry. Homeless.
Yeah.
Eyes. In the nothing, 96 below the wave. When stone is dust and there remains the only haven you can trust. And the devil in a black dress watches over. My guardian angel walks away. Life is short and love is always over. And my morning black queen come carry me far away. With a fire from the fireworks up above, with a gun for a lover and a shot for the pain, you run for cover in the temple of love. Cold and long in the temple of love will fall before this black wind calls my name to you no more.
Men don't want to get killed. Better clear on out the back.
Murder for the money, yeah, murder every day. Murder every inch of the goddamn world.
astronaut. And Peter Pan's in a fit like a hero's of the world. Out of shape and barely stone. The hurt in my eye. Another creature disguised like a shadows of the world. And the politician's girl. So why must I try? So why?
This has been Glee Glee Productions, specially made for WNRB, Central Wisconsin Community Radio. I'm Mike Cannon.
This tape will self-destruct in 5 seconds.